Welcome to another episode of Good Value by Antipodes.
Daimler Trucks is one of the largest heavy vehicle companies in the world. Amongst other brands, it manufactures Mercedes-Benz and Freightliner trucks, has over 40 production sites globally and over 100,000 employees. There's a good chance many of the trucks and buses you pass on the roads wherever you are Daimler's. In this episode, I'm joined by Daimler Trucks CEO Martin Daun. As well as delving into Daimler's business model, Martin and I discuss where we are in the truck cycle and Daimler's growth and strategic initiatives. We also discuss why the adoption of electric trucks has been slower than passenger cars and what needs to happen to meet the legislation that's coming over the next few years and the opportunities this creates for Daimler. I hope you enjoy this episode. Martin, it's a pleasure to have you on our podcast. Now, some of our listeners may not be aware that up until early 2021, Daimler Trucks was part of a larger entity that combined Daimler Trucks and Mercedes Cars. And we often see that businesses that come out of large groups have been undermanaged. Where do you see the opportunities within your relatively new standalone entity?
First of all, thanks for having me on your podcast. And you start right with a very, very interesting question. Undermanaged is an interesting word. Let me try to get it out of my experience. Daimler Truck was always an independent division inside the bigger Daimler Group. But there is one huge difference. To report to the capital markets, it's completely different than to report to a board in a conglomerate. Inside a conglomerate, you just have to show that you are working hard, that you are not the problem, that you are all the problems facing from the outside world is something which burdens you and you work hard on it. Capital markets are completely different. They care about results. They don't care whether I work hard or not hard. They don't care who the reason for the problem is. They want results. And that is what a true entrepreneur always should do. And that is something which is always missing inside conglomerates. And that is what I see now, not just with the board of management of Daimler Truck, but with a lot of people working with us now really feeling results matter more than ever.
And one of the key elements that appeals to us with your business is the market structure. Trucks is a very consolidated sector in the developed world. Daimler and three other operators control the bulk of the market, and Daimler itself has around 40% share of North American heavy trucks and 20% share of European trucks. Now, I'm sure your extensive service network plays a big role here, but can you talk more broadly about the barriers to entry which have helped Daimler defend its market position and also create an impediment to new entrants?
You can say, first of all, a truck is not a truck. I get often asked, how much does a truck cost? And my standard answer is, how much does a house cost? And that is nearly impossible to answer. A truck serves so many different purposes, whether it's a refuse truck or inner city distribution truck or a long-haul tractor or a four-axle construction side truck or something which carries an expensive equipment for a mining site, it's all a truck. And we can do that out of one Lego set. Yeah, that means we have a lot of parts from chassis to cabin to electronics to axles to powertrain, which we can combine for the likes of a customer. Each segment is too small to really serve it. You have to serve everything. And that is the biggest barrier, because whoever wants to come into that has either to immediately serve all segments, or he will never get the scales the four players in the market currently have.
Mm. But also that parts and service network, it really is critical, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And that, because that comes on top of it. And while on the Pesca side, you can have one town a good dealer, and then in the other town no dealer, which doesn't matter for sales in the first town, on trucks you always have to cover one area immediately. Yeah, whether this is NAFTA or whether this is Europe or whether this is any other large country, you need immediately the whole economical area, and that is a huge, it's a yes or no, it's a black and white thing.
Mm-hmm. And do you see opportunities to grow market share? You know, you've refreshed your product in that vocational truck segment, and these are the trucks that are typically used in construction and infrastructure, as opposed to on-highway logistics vehicles. Perhaps you can touch on this and any other opportunities you see to take share.
I mean, in a market where you have four big players and ultimately no bad company, market share is always a pretty tricky issue because it has to add up at the end of 100 to 100, and any gain of you is a loss of the other. And if you do now interviews with the four CEOs of those four companies, you won't find a single one who would tell you that he expects to lose share in the next couple of years. So if you add up the targets, you end up always with more than 100. I would go back for my basic mantra for entire business I do. At the end, the customer has happily to separate from his money. That is what you have to target for. That means you have to bring him a product, a solution, in a way that he really wants that product and where he is always seems this is a better than any other alternative. If you fulfill that, this really deep customer understanding and serving his needs perfectly, then the market share is a result, not a target by itself. And that is what our company tries. And therefore, I'm convinced because we have great products, because we focus on service, because we work hard, that it ultimately will translate into market share, as we have seen or shown, for example, in the United States, where we have grown to 40% over a period of time.
Mm-mm. And in terms of that, with that vocational segment, that is quite interesting. That's quite an interesting segment, isn't it? Because if I recall correctly, it's a large part of the US heavy truck market, and Daimler Truck has been relatively underrepresented in that particular segment compared to other areas. And with this new product, do you think that could be an interesting opportunity for you?
And that is indeed an opportunity. We are dominant in the on-highway tractor business in the US, and then we figured out that we are completely underrepresented in the vocational system. And it had to do with our product. So we completely refreshed the product, brought a really tailor-made for the U.S. vocational market product. In my opinion, absolute excellent reviews, and not in my opinion, but in the opinion of our customers. And that gives us certainly an opportunity to get now in a segment where we had been underrepresented with a really good results into it. And that will, in my opinion, ultimately translate into partnership.
And what about Europe? The profitability of your European operations is lower than North America. And interestingly, in your time at the company, you led the turnaround in profitability of Daimler's North American trucks business. So what are the learnings, or are there learnings that you can take from that experience and apply it to the current European operations?
I mean, I would debate that ultimately the profitability of those two markets is not too far apart. North America certainly has the advantage that it's a pretty homogeneous market. Why in Europe there is the business from Brazil, which is with its own economic cycle. There's a huge export business to the developing countries in which is not present in North America. And then we have Europe itself. At least 30 different countries with different trajectories. And if you have several economic areas which develop differently, then the average of that could never be as good as one homogeneous area. However, there are things inside the company itself which can be done and has to be done better. So it's a focus on quality, which we did in the last couple of years, because we had quality problems about 10 years ago. Losing trust is pretty easy in the market. Gaining it back, it's more difficult. We did that. We worked hard. And I would say the last 5 years, we did here tremendous strides forward. And I would say the trucks we sell today are quality-wise the best trucks we ever sold in the entire world. But until the customer really says that, these are trucks we can trust, that takes always time to build it up. And the second thing is certainly on the fixed cost side, when we had to restructure North America, we cut workforce pretty significantly, pretty fast overnight. And that is, unfortunately, by European labor laws, not possible. So it takes much longer than to get to a situation like you are in the United States.
But So it is that focus on quality product and also assessing the cost base.
Fixed cost.
Look, Martin, that gives us a really great sense of the market structure. So next, I wanted to talk about where we are in the cycle. So demand for trucks is very linked to the economic cycle. You know, the stronger the economy, the greater the demand for goods, and the more trucks we need to move these goods around. Mm-hmm. And post-COVID, we've seen consumption shift away from goods and towards services, and we've also had headwinds from China. Now that these supply chain disruptions and pent-up demand have normalized, it's fair to say that the truck industry in the developed world is heading for a down cycle in 2024. But despite this, you're forecasting more or less flat revenue and EBIT in 2024. So my question for you is what are you improving operationally that allows you to deliver flat revenue and margin despite falling volumes? And what upside can that translate to when volumes inevitably return?
I mean, first of all, our cycles got a little bit smoother than in the past. And the main reason was that we had in the last years on the supply side a lot of shortages. That if we wouldn't have any shortages in the industry, we would have seen 2022 at least as a monster year and 23 higher volumes than we've seen. And that certainly the valley in 24 would be lower. I call it always the three elementary laws of trucking. Number one, nobody runs a truck out of fun because he needs. There is a transportation need to be done. Trucks are used. So that means there is always a demand for trucks. Then comes law number two. However, you can always wait another year until you buy a truck. The entire world could live without a single truck for at least 1 year. But then comes number three. Ultimately, you have to buy a truck because you need one. Law number one. And that creates our cycle. You can always wait a little bit. And at the end, and if you buy too much, then you have to buy less in the following year. And if you buy less, then you have to buy more the next year after. So after every peak comes a valley, and after every valley comes the next peak. That's a cyclical business. So number one, what we did in the past was we adjusted our production systems to those ups and downs in the market. Yeah, we invest consistently, but on the other side, production-wise, we can be extremely flexible. Plus minus 20% is not a problem for us into our systems. Therefore, we can keep the cost relatively stable, and therefore we can keep the EBIT relatively stable. On the revenue side, we tried in some year to increase our what we call service revenue. Yeah, we have, if we sell 500,000 trucks a year, we have at least 3 million out in the market which we service. And for those trucks to deliver to them parts, services, and other truck-related revenue streams, that helps us then to smoothen those cycles. And then going backwards from 23 to 24 with slightly less, 5 to 10% less volume, that is not a problem.
Mm-hmm. So that's really interesting, isn't it? That 500,000 per year translates to 3 million in the market. And it is that servicing and that parts revenue which keeps, which plugs the gap, which smooths the cycle, as you've been pointed out. And then, of course, you can, as you also called out, your ability to adjust your production as volumes fall to allow you to keep those profits stable. Let's extend the lens a little further. We know that the transport sector has to decarbonize to achieve climate goals. And there are multiple pieces of legislation that are being introduced that will impact the emissions profile of the industry over the coming years. And this impacts both truck makers like yourselves, but also trucking companies that operate the assets. So I've got a few questions that relate to this. And the first one is, can you talk about your technology roadmap in relation to these looming standards? Given how nascent decarbonisation is, you're pushing multiple avenues. So is it too early to say how this will play out?
For me, yes, we are pushing two alternatives. The one is battery electric trucks. The second one are hydrogen power trucks. And the hydrogen power trucks, you can differentiate in fuel cell and hydrogen combustion. These are, for me, not contrary developments, where it's either or at the end. They are complementary developments. So I could see, let's say, by 2030, that all three elements will be important elements in a decarbonized transportation world. And the secret behind that is that studies show clearly that the build-up of two complete new energy provision systems is less expensive than to do one alone. And I can elaborate on that if you are interested a little bit more. The key is not the product. The key is the energy, and in this, not necessarily the energy production, but the energy distribution. If we would go entirely with electric trucks, we would need at every single truck stop at least 20, if not 40 megawatt of electric power to charge the truck if every single truck would run. And that is the demand normally of a small town, but yeah, and that every single truck stop. Now with electric, when we approach it from a different angle, that was the end game, you can say, it's always easy to install the first charger. Yeah, it's a little bit more expensive to get to 5-6 chargers. It gets even more difficult if the charger needs to be a megawatt charger for fast charging. But then, if you have five chargers where you can need an hour to charge a truck, that limits the amount of trucks you have. So you have to go to 10, 20, 40. And the cost and the investment cost for those chargers, they grow exponential as more you have. Yeah, easy start, exponential growth. Then you go to hydrogen. Here you have just the opposite way. It's extremely expensive to start a hydrogen economy, but it scales nicely when it gets bigger. So ultimately, out of those two curves, relatively low invest for a few battery electric trucks to we need a lot of hydrogen trucks to scale, you get an optimal point where you have then electric trucks and hydrogen trucks. Generally, you can say every truck that returns to a depot in the night where the charging and the driving is separated, you know, driving through the day, charging through the night, will be battery electric. Everywhere wherever you go in longer distances and less predictable routes, it has to be something with hydrogen.
So it is linked to distance, the distance that the truck travels.
Yeah.
So it's the distance that the truck travels and the time available for the charging, which determines what is the more suitable powertrain mix.
Yeah, and the predictability of the route and the energy demand you have. You know, if you are a groceries distribution center and you have 20 trucks coming back every night and driving the next day out for 300 miles, then you can pretty easily calculate the amount of energy you need any night, and therefore can prepare and invest for that. If you don't know whether you go to Bratislava tomorrow or to Barcelona or to Stockholm, and I can give even in the US would be even worse because the distances are longer, then you don't know where you need your energy the next day or the next week or the next month. And this, in my opinion, makes it even more difficult.
I mean, this touches on the next question that I wanted to ask, which was, you know, it's not just about having product available, is it? Is it? You actually need customers to buy it. And the adoption has been much slower in commercial vehicles than it has been in passenger vehicles. And, you know, I think your previous answer really touches on why the adoption has been slower. But how does this? How do we overcome this? It isn't just simply investment. I think there's more to it, isn't it?
I mean, the first is certainly the basis is you don't buy a truck for fun or to impress your neighbor. I, for example, privately drive an electric car since 4 years or so. But my first inclination to buy one because was that my neighbor had a very nice electric BMW. And I wanted to show that Mercedes has nice electric cars too. So it was clearly a show-off thing. Yeah, and being a CEO of a large company, the cost of the car is not that important. So it was far more important the image I show with my car. And then I had my wall box in my private garage, so everything was fine. And certainly I have a second car that runs on gasoline. This is the fun part. Yeah, this is the typical private one, and so it trickles down through the population. And at some point of time, you come to barriers because now you have on the Pesca side, it's charging too. How can I do if I live in an apartment building? How can I then have the charging there? But track is completely different from the very first day. You run a track to earn money. And you calculate what we call total cost of ownership, cents per mile. And if this is if one technology provides me X and the other technology is X plus, and everything zero emission is X plus, then you can't even afford to run it. I call them, then you buy two or three trucks, which I call gaining headline trucks. When you get them, the mayor will be there or the local politician. You get parallel, you get 200, 300 diesel trucks, which you talk to nobody about it, and the electric trucks are not running. They are basically there at any event to show off. This is the first start. This is what we had the last couple of years. We are currently in a phase which I call gaining knowledge. That is, if a bigger company buys about 20 trucks to gain experience, what works, what does not work. But we are far away from the phase that I call gaining business. That is when I really run everything on electrical, and that we are not yet there. The price of electricity is too high. The cost of CO2 is too low, brutally spoken. The infrastructure is not working. The trucks are more expensive and will always be. And until we haven't found that equation ultimately, how it fits for the customer, we'll never see it. Now, in Europe, we started to introduce the CO2-based road toll. That is now an instrument where you can easily increase the price for burning fuel, and then you get the TCO question resolved, and then the moment it's cheaper, and then it's very nice. If it's more expensive, nobody will buy. If it's significantly cheaper to run ZEV than everyone. Yeah, it's more than the black and white situation. But then comes the infrastructure piece. And therefore, my consistent speeches to politicians is, if we want a fast change, we have to make CO2 more expensive, our cars, CO2-based road toll. But more importantly, we have to get the infrastructure in place. And that is a long way forward. Therefore, we see a massive decarbonization of the sector at the end of the decade, 2028, 2030, not because of us, not because of our customers, but because of the time it takes to build up that infrastructure.
And I think there's a comment that you've made earlier, which sort of ties into the statement that you made, you run a truck to make money. And I think one of the comments that I've heard you make earlier is that you need all three elements for this to work. You need to have great products, but you also need to have that parity in total cost of ownership, which you've spoken about here. We need to make CO2 more expensive, so you need to have that parity in total cost of ownership, and you need to have that working infrastructure. But what I loved about your comment was that you said something to the effect of, if any of these are zero, it's multiplicative. The whole thing is zero. You have to have all three. Yeah,
you listen very well, Alison. Yes, I use it. I call it the magic formula. Product, TCO, infrastructure, like a multiplication, if one is zero, it doesn't matter of the amount of the other two factors. The end result is zero, and therefore we sell all the industry at the moment, or Daimler Trucks. Last year, 3,400 electric vehicles and 523,000 diesel vehicles. Yeah, and it won't change as long as at the moment TCO and infrastructure will be zero.
Infrastructure really is that critical one, isn't it? So given everything that you've just touched on now, do you think that these barriers that still exist, you know, will it see policymakers, or does it force policymakers to maybe take a more pragmatic approach? For example, do you see a scenario where perhaps these policy deadlines are pushed out or they're watered down because we just don't get there? We don't get there in time.
That would mean we call 6 years prior to 2030 already defeat. If we would do that today, then you push it out for 5 years, then you have in 5 years the same discussion, then you push it out for another 5 years, and that means forever. No, there is now the time to act, and it is possible. Yeah, as I said, the CO2-based toll is a very, very important stage to get the TCOs out of that equation with the value. So it will be cheaper ultimately if the CO2-based toll is introduced. And then the infrastructure, we have to start invest now. We invest as Daimler Truck together with our competitors in joint ventures. We push hard on the H2 infrastructures, and I know that the mineral oil companies have to change as well. They need to decarbonize. And then I would say the pressure is there to get it done as it is for us to get it done. And we want to save the planet. And therefore, I would say, no, it's far too early to call pragmatically anything off, because then we can call the entire fight against climate change off. And we don't want that.
In this scenario where these deadlines are maintained, do you see a scenario then where for Daimler Trucks demand is potentially pulled forward? So a situation where you see your customers purchasing trucks ahead of these 2027 regulations kicking in, which requires them to buy zero emission trucks. And as you said earlier, these are going to be more expensive trucks because simply the engine is more complex. So could demand get pulled forward? How do you see this playing out?
Yeah, but Alison, if the running of the trucks with CO2-based toll system gets, for example, more expensive, that it makes no sense to pull it forward. We had a similar situation about 15 years ago when Europe introduced the Euro 5 regulation. It was pretty clear through a taxation system it becomes prohibitive expensive to run a Euro 4 or Euro 3 truck in the future. Then despite a Euro 5 truck being far more expensive, despite in those days the uncertainty whether we could have the urea at blue or another fluid you had to have to run those Euro 5 trucks available. You know, there was a lot of similar uncertainty there. We didn't have a big pull forward impact because it was clear for everyone, if I go with the old trucks, I get penalized then in the future years. It's not just the investment, it's the running of the truck. So here I would say no. If we get a pull forward impact, you have that, let's say there might be a great half year and a bad half year, but this washes out over the time.
Sure. And the push forward to decarbonize, what does that mean for your profitability? And how do you manage sales and pricing, you know, in the event that the costs of the vehicle will go up? Because, you know, as I understand, the traditional internal combustion engine trucks, a lot of the parts of the powertrain is internalized, which allows you to keep your costs low. It's slightly different when we're talking about zero emission trucks, isn't it?
I mean, first of all, bringing technology into a truck not necessarily comes at our expense. It comes normally at the price for the truck, and that means the customer ultimately pays it, and we are making money as in the past. So I'm not concerned about that. Now with a value add of us, you can debate that too. Today I don't buy all the engine parts myself. Yes, we do a lot of assembly work when it comes to engines or transmissions that in future will go away. But these are, in my opinion, are minor things that will not impact ultimately our profitability. So I would say, relatively spoken, we'll keep our profitability. In absolute terms, it will go up because the trucks will go more expensive. On the other side, we might have one or the other more higher investments. So ultimately, it washes out. No, we have trucks in the last 30 years have more technology in, and it therefore we are, I would say, a little bit a growth industry, not necessarily in volumes of trucks sold, but in the value we sell to our customer.
Growth in the value. Martin, final question. Daimler Trucks has a strong balance sheet and you've been returning cash to shareholders via dividends and buybacks. But you also need to balance your CapEx and R&D, you know, required for the transition to zero emission vehicles. So how should we think about capital allocation over the coming years? And can this transition be managed within the envelope of your current capital investment?
I think so. Look, we have a history of very strong cash conversions, so 0.9 about in a long-term average. And I could see that we continue with that in the future as well. Now with our raising profits, the 0.9, there is enough money there for us to invest. There is definitely a clear issue that we say we want to have about 40% of our net profit, at least 40% of our net profits as dividend, but between 40 to 60 to play out those volatile ranges. We want to be a consistent dividend payer. And after all the investments and after a very shareholder-friendly dividend policy, there still will be cash potentially available. And then we use it for a share buyback program, as we started one with 2 billion. And I remember when we introduced it, people were a little bit skeptical whether that was too much and too hefty. And meanwhile, I get always asked, when is the next program coming? So it shows we are a strong company with strong profitability, with strong balance sheet, and with a clear willingness to invest everything which is necessary and have then the conviction there is enough left for really good shareholder return.
Martin, that's been fabulous. Thank you so much for your time today and good luck for the year ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me and thanks for talking about our company. It was fun. Thank you.
For further information on Antipodes, head to our website, antipodes.com, and you can also follow us on LinkedIn and Twitter.
The content in this podcast is general information only. It is not advice of any kind and doesn't take into account your personal financial situation, objectives, or needs. You should seek professional advice before making any financial decisions. Stock commentary is illustrative only and not a recommendation to buy, hold, or sell any securities.